and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, don't you know, my darling? I said it right now, and the cotton is high.
Yeah, today is the day. It's the start of summer. What is it, 8:20 tonight that officially we are into the summer season? Tomorrow's the first full day of summer, although weather not exactly showing summer-like signs through the weekend. Much of the province will be getting rain. Much of the province will be happy to see some moisture this weekend. Good for the crops, certainly good for the wildfires. And we've had some tornado sightings, some twisters in the province. I'm going to bring Abby Zivering from our newsroom in just after 9. She's been following this story as well. We got a few things that we're talking about. Full show for a Friday. Much has been made about these grounded water bombers. The Saskatchewan Public Safety Agency has a fleet of water bomb planes, some of them down for maintenance or repairs, which is causing some concern and some misinformation out there in the province. So I'm happy to say we've got Marlo Pritchard joining us around 9:30 this morning, president of the Saskatchewan Public Safety Agency, here to kind of let us know the full story with the assets they've been able to provide to fight the fires. I've got a very talented guest on the show today, the mastermind behind the TV show Stories of the North. It's a great children's show going into season 3. We've got this talented artist, writer, and producer from the province joining the show today. And of course, it's Friday. So all of the regular Friday features, Bugs and Hugs at 10. It's Eaton Time with Belton Johnson at 11. And just ahead of tonight's game for the Saskatchewan Roughriders against the Argos, green and white prognostications coming up today at noon. All right, let's get going with the big talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome. Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show, the big talker.
Well, it was back in March that we learned about some charges that were laid on a now former Regina Police Sergeant, Robert Semenchuk. He 22 years on the police force, was charged with breach of trust and one charge of unauthorized use of a computer. It's believed that he used his access to police databases to target vulnerable, marginalized women for his own personal gains. We know during a police briefing in March of this year, they couldn't say how many women were targeted, but some sources say it could be as many as 30 victims. Semenchuk used a fake name, which is why the Regina Police Service decided to release a photo back in the spring of this year, hoping that maybe more victims would come forward if they recognized his face. Police first made aware of the allegations of this in 2023. A member of the public came forward with some concerns. It was that year that Semenchuk was suspended with pay, restricted, obviously, from accessing the police service and certainly police databases. And then just over 3 weeks after the announcement of his charges, the police chief himself, Farouk Sheikh, temporarily removed from active service after a complaint came in. Recently, I read an article in the Globe and Mail from someone that I worked with as a colleague when she was a reporter at the Leader Post. Jana Pruden is a feature writer, a podcaster, a crime reporter. She's an award-winning journalist with the Globe and Mail. She wrote a piece in the Globe and Mail called "The Man Behind the Wrong Number." She spoke with a handful of Semenchuk's victims and how they were targeted, feeling traumatized and charged. And we've got Jana Pruden joining us by phone this morning. Jana, thank you so much for taking the call.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I've read so many of your writings. You are a strong, great, competent reporter. What was it about this case when you heard about it that sparked your interest?
I mean, it was something that immediately sparked my interest. The woman Kay, who's the main woman in the story, she's the first woman that went forward to police and exposed what turned out to be a much larger case, much larger allegations. The first time she told me about it, I mean, it's automatically the kind of thing we do, that this is really serious. This is someone with a lot of power. Police have so much power. And the story that she was telling me about being preyed on by this person was really scary. It was shocking in parts. And she's someone that really, you know, does not have a lot of power compared to him. She's an Indigenous woman in Regina. She's a disabled woman. She was quite afraid. And I just knew immediately this is a really important story and also a really important issue more broadly, police breach of trust and misuse of their power.
coming from the background that I did, and you and I had the opportunity to work together in various ways when you were at the Leader Post, it is about the public trust, because for policing, it's all about ensuring that the public trusts you to do your job out there. When situations like this happen, there's no easy way to deal with it. It really does become about being as open and transparent as possible. Yet I'm guessing from the lens that you look at it, there was probably still room for more information, because since the court date, I sense from your article, there's been some frustration about the amount of information you've been able to get.
I mean, you know, I've been a court reporter for a long time, a police reporter for a long time, and so I do understand the other side of it. You can't lay out all the allegations to the public, and we see this not only in cases where there are allegations against the police. We see this in all kinds of criminal cases. You can't just release everything, or at least that's the practice in Canada. America has a slightly different view, yeah. Because the idea is that you don't want to compromise anything until it goes to court. But one of the things that really frustrated me about this case, and I think about some other police breach of trust cases that we're seeing in other areas of the country, is that when you hear on paper one count of breach of trust, and that's mm-hmm. that's what was charged, one count of breach of trust, one count of misuse of a computer database, that disconnect between what that sounds like and how serious someone might think that is really far apart from what this case appears to be, which is allegations of at least preying on at least 24 women using not only a fake name, but a very complex false identity mm-hmm. and false premise under which he's first contacting the women, using what appears to be a mistaken phone number, and many, many questions about how is he finding these women. So, you know, Kay, the main person in the story, was in a domestic violence shelter. She had been given a phone, so it wasn't her normal phone number. She's at truly the lowest point in her life. She's injured. She's traumatized. She has nothing. And this text pops up on her phone that appears to be a wrong number, and a conversation starts. When the other women, her contact with the police was for times that she'd been suicidal. She's a highly vulnerable person, and people were calling the police to help her when she was suicidal. Other women had no contact with the police, but they still sort of match a pattern that I see in some of his victims. So lots of questions about, you know, how he's finding these women. And that's not what you think of when you hear one count of breach of trust.
Right.
So I think putting on the record how serious this full allegation is, and allowing the public to know it. I also firmly believe, as the police do, that there's probably other women out there. And I have been contacted by at least two women who have not spoken to the police who had contact with him. So I feel that's very important to put the story to the public, too, to reach people who didn't know the scope of this or didn't know about it at all.
Janet Pruden is my guest, award-winning journalist, Globe and Mail feature writer, and wrote a recent feature piece on the man behind the wrong number, which is ultimately a former Regina Police Service member, Bob Semenchuk, who is charged with breach of trust, one charge of unauthorized use of a computer. Do you have a sense, Jana, were the police able to give you an indication? Did they work with prosecution on determining what the charges would be and the number of charges?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the prosecution service tells me to ask the police tell me to ask the prosecution service. Yeah. So that's one of the questions that I have. And in a broader sense, because I feel this is a very big case in Regina. It involves a lot of women, but there are other cases that are similar where police are attending, say, a domestic violence call, of dealing with a vulnerable woman, and then going back to the house later and trying to engage in sex with her. We have cases, police officer was just sentenced here in Edmonton, in cases that involved multiple women. There's a police officer that's wanted in Calgary that's gone to warrant status, who's facing charges around eight women. There's cases in BC, there's cases in Saskatoon. And in most of these cases, it is one count of breach of trust that encompasses multiple women. And I do have questions about that. Whether one thing that's funny about, not funny, one thing that really strikes me about breach of trust is that, and that many of the women have mentioned to me, breach of trust, the victim of that is actually the public. You're breaching the public trust. So these women are being considered witnesses, not necessarily victims. And that may seem semantic in sentencing. You know, they will take into account, presumably, if someone is convicted in Robert Semenchuk's case or in these other cases, they take into account the experience of people who are harmed by the offense. But it actually is very meaningful to the women that when they're called in, they're told they're a witness. They're not considered a victim. So I think there is a question about, you know, why is it just one charge that's encompassing so many different cases? When, as you know, sometimes we'll have someone who, you know, goes and steals something at a 7-Eleven, and then you see a whole line of charges that arise from one incident. And I think fairly, there's a question about, you know, is deliberate sexual predation, that's what we're alleging here. Of course, it's not proven. He hasn't gone through the courts, but is deliberate sexual predation on at least 24 women, is that one count of breach of trust?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the effects on the women are extremely severe. You know, some are doing better than others, but this is, you know, I think it's easy for people to almost discount it. Oh, it's, you know, people lie to get other people into bed all the time or something like that. But that is not the situation here. I mean, so I have now spoken to 9 women. Two of them have moved out of the city, out of the province, because they are terrified. The police have a lot of power, as you know. And every time they see a police car, they're terrified. They don't know if that's a friend of Bob's, if that's someone who wants to harass them because of Bob. And whether or not that's true, I think in most cases, you know, that's just a police car driving by. But it's terrifying. Mm. They feel completely betrayed. They feel, you know, those of them that had sexual relationships with him, they were consensual based on what they knew about him. At least 2 of the women have told me they would not have had a relationship with him if they knew he was a police officer, because of pre-existing fear of police officers. But I think for people to know, to find out, okay, this isn't Bob Semenchuk, a contractor who told me all kinds of things about his life as a contractor who, you know, appeared to be a contractor. This is actually a police officer who knew everything about me. I mean, that's the scary thing, right? It's not that he just met someone in a bar and gave a fake name. It's that the allegations are that he was able to access information about women who'd called the police and some who hadn't, and then use that to make this fake wrong number phone mm-hmm. call and then engage in a relationship. And the effects are extremely profound.
Jana, can I just have 2 quick questions. We only have about a minute and a half left. Jana Pruden is my guest with the Globe and Mail. First one is, where is the case at?
So he just had a court appearance last week. It's been put forward a couple of weeks to early July. His lawyer did say that they expect a plea. Essentially, nothing's happened. I mean, this is not unusual. This is the court system. It moves slowly. So we do expect at some point to have a plea entered. He has not appeared in person for any court appearances. So really there has not been anything going on in court at the moment, except just adjournments.
Well, I know and trust you will be following through, and you and I can maybe connect again in the future once we know some more details. But my last question, and I'm sorry to give you a big question with a very short timeline, but how do police, you've got the vantage point of doing this sort of reporting throughout your career. My vantage point is I want nothing more than the police to continue to build solid trust in the community. How do police services move forward from a situation like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent question. And the good cops out there, and there are many good cops, they really despise situations like this. It hurts them as they're trying to do their job too. But I think there need to be actually serious systemic changes in, because the fact it's happening in multiple police forces shows it's not just one off. It's not just one bad apple, as the saying goes. So I have many thoughts on systemic changes that I think would help protect women from sexual predation by police officers. And I think that's extremely important. And I think police, that will benefit police, all police, because, you know, nobody is happy when there's a situation like this. You could right. see the police chief in Calgary when they were announcing the charges there in December. And, you know, it's very grave. It looks terrible. It makes good officers' jobs harder. And we should all be concerned about anyone who's preying on vulnerable people and vulnerable women.
Jenna, thanks for giving us some time this morning. You and I will connect as this case moves through the courts.
We will. Thank you so much for giving me this time to talk about it. Very important.
Jenna Pruden, award-winning journalist, Globe and Mail feature reporter, podcaster, and again, the article, if you're interested in going back and finding in the Globe and Mail, the man behind the wrong number. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.